Rashi is in the beginning of Bahalosta. Okay. Kachas Alevim. So the Levim are being nominated and selected for honor. It's an honor to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's a hard lifestyle. It's challenge, it's sacrifice. They won't own land. They won't have cities in the classic sense. Obviously, Levim can own land, but in Ari Miklat, Ari Migrash, they'll have to be committed to a life of service in the Beis HaMikdash. There aren't as many halachas that apply to Levim as apply to Kohanim, but there are halachas that restrict Levim and their experience. So, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe to select them. Kachas HaLevim. But Rashi flips their term kach a little bit. It's a famous Rashi because he does it several times in Tanakh. Kachas HaLevim, Rashi writes, kachem bedvarim, speak to them. Ashrechem shetizku lios shamashim lamakom. So there are two very important parts of this Rashi. First of all, you can't be coercive to people in general. And certainly when you're submitting them to a life of challenge and hardship and responsibility, you should never. A lot of times people come ask me, boys come ask me, should I enter chinuch? Should I become a rabbi? So I want to say, of course you should. You have so much talent. You'd be a great rabbi one day. But being a rav, like anything, and certainly being a rav and a teacher, there's a lot of hardship and struggle, financial and otherwise. So I always tell them, I think you'd be great. You have a lot of talent. You'd be fantastic. But it has to be your choice. Because the choice to endure hardship has to be a personal choice. All personal choice should be personal. And anytime I take away your personal choice, then I'm robbing you of your dignity. Human dignity lies in freedom of conscience. I was just talking about this with some people in South Africa. I was talking to some of the Madrichim. You should never even ask someone a question the person doesn't have the right to say no to. Because that's also taking away their decision. Some people say, can you ask a Talmud to bring something back for you from America? I'm very hesitant because I know you can't say no. Or it's going to be hard for you to say no. So I'm asking you a question that you don't have the right to answer. So basically, I'm giving you the question and the answer together. Obviously, if we have a relationship, it's not a big deal or something, and I know that you're happy to do it, but it's a very, very tenuous place to be where you ask someone something. Obviously, your wife or your good friend, you're not asking them. It's part of a relationship. It's reciprocal. You'll do favors for them. They'll do favors for you. When you don't have a relationship, so in general, you shouldn't coerce people, but specifically when you are expecting them to enter into a position of struggle and hardship and challenge and mission. So Hashem tells Moshe, kachem midvarim, don't take them, even though it's compulsory. The Levim didn't have a choice here. It's not like the Levim would say, you know what, I don't want to be a Levi. It's genealogical. It's genetic. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, at least when you speak to them, empower them as if it's their choice. Try to persuade them, right? This could be a futile process because they have no choice, but talk to them. And what should you talk to them about? Talk to them not just about the responsibilities and the challenges and the duties and the hardships, but talk to them about the glory. Talk to them about the long-term vision. Kachem bidvarim, what should you tell them? Ashrechem shetisku lios shamashim lamakum. Talk about the fact that it's, on a day-to-day, maybe they don't feel so excited to come to the Beis HaMikdash and open the gates and carry the Mishkan, serve the Kohanim, but if you think about the broader vision, and I know that the year is coming to an end for some of the boys, and I tried to tell you in the beginning of the year that vision is so important for long-term accomplishment, not just discipline, but vision. Like, where is this all heading? How does a cold, windy day in January have meaning? What is it leading to? How is it going to aggregate with other cold, windy January days, and what are hope to accomplish? So it's really a fascinating Rashi. Kachem bidvarim ashrechem shetisku lios shamashim lamakom. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about the ceremony of the Levim. So one part of the ceremony makes sense. The virutar, hazeh aleh mechatas. So that sounds a little bit like paradula, or at least to be mitara them. And everyone was a tamei meis. Certainly the Levim were all tamei meis from their egel fighting and egel battles. So they were tamei meis. So to enter the Beis HaMikdash, they need the process of purification. That makes sense. But then they get scalped. They go and all their hair gets cut off. The Aviru Tar, all of a sudden they have to undergo, what do you call it, buzz cut? I just was asked a question yesterday with someone in India. They want to know, are they allowed to use a non-Jewish barber? Because the Gemara says you shouldn't use a non-Jewish barber because it may kill you. But I think we passed that day. Barbers aren't really, most barbers, maybe the horror movies, the barbers are out to get you. But the most barbers, they just want to cut your hair and take your money. So you can use a non-Jewish barber. In fact, most people in Chutz Lars can use non-Jewish barbers. Italians well-known barbers. Most of these Italian barbers. Not to be in any way generalized and racist. But anyway, getting back to the Rashi. So why did they have to go to the barber? Why did they have to get cut? Where does this come from? So Rashi says, Matzasi b'divir b'nei Moshe ha-darshan, one of the darshanim the Rashi quotes, l'visha nitnu kapar ala b'choros, because they were exchanging the b'choros. Okay, fine. Why do they have to get the haircut? Because the b'choros were part of the people that worshipped Avodah Zarah during the Egel, and of course for them, they're even more culpable, because so much more is expected from them. And Avodah Zarah is considered like Zivchei Mason. You're coming into contact with death. Why Avodah Zarah is like death, we won't elaborate now, but any contact with Avodah Zarah is like contact with death. And the closest non-dying person we have in Halacha to mimic and to simulate the process of recovering from death is a Metzara. Chazal say a Metzara is like death for obvious reasons, because there's such a physical dilapidation and physical decay. So it's the closest. Obviously it's not death, but it's something akin to death. So the Metzara is a process of recovering from death. The Bacharos had contact with death. So Leviim, who replaced the Bacharos, need to mimic, in part, the ceremony of a Metzara. And in fact, this mimicking of the ceremony of a Metzara is also expressed by the Tenufos. There are various Tenufos, and the Tenufos were central to the process of Metzara. Wow, that sounds like a Gzera, Ligzera, Ligzera. Because the Bacharos had contact with the Avodah Zarah, and the Leviim were replacing the Bacharos, so they have to behave a little bit like a Metzara. These are Leviim that are Kedoshim. They just came back from the battlefield. They're Moshe's family. What do I have to do with the Metzara? What does the Metzara have to do with me? The answer is that part of leadership is taking responsibility, even when it's not your fault. It has nothing to do with the Leviim. There's an issue here that has to be solved. There's an outstanding debt. Am Yisrael worshipped Avodah Zarah. Worship of the Avodah Zarah is akin to death. Someone has to undergo that process. And the definition of leadership, again, today it's used so cheaply and so diluted. When a leadership is, okay, you know, I'll do it. I'll take that responsibility. No one else wants to take the responsibility. No one else wants to work at this. It's something that has to be done. It's ugly. It's uncouth. You don't want to have all your hair cut off. You don't want to be treated like a Metzara. And the uglier it is and the less elegant it is, the more a display of your leadership is when you take that responsibility. So it's such a stunning Leviim are entering this leadership role. You think they'd be glorified, like a coronation, like Prince Charles, and everyone will celebrate them with some rock and roll songs, and celebrities will come. You know how you enter into your leadership role? You behave like a Metzara, which is the most ugly and repulsive association. Right? It's not fun to be a Metzara. No one wants to look at you. So you're going through a Metzara-like process. It's not fun. It's not elegant. And it's not even your fault. And not only that, but I was the solution to their contact with death. It's not like we were the innocent bystanders. We were the people who rallied against their contact with death. So it's such a powerful statement about how to be a leader is to find the aspect that no one wants to deal with. It's disgusting and repelling, and that you take that responsibility as you enter into your position of leadership. That's why they have to undergo this Metzara-like process. I guess one more Rashi, since it's only 8 minutes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu explains why he's exchanging the Leviim for the Bechor. Ki nisunim nisunim heim ali mitach b'nei Yisrael. I'm dedicating the Leviim from amongst the Jewish people. Tachas pitras korach and Bechor. I'm dedicating them to the service of the Mishkan in exchange to the Bechor. But now Hashem has to explain why the Bechor were selected to serve in the Beis HaMikdash and the Leviim are replacing them. So before this pasuk, we would think it's just because it's natural. The Bechor is the head of the family, and the Bechor, it personalized Avodas Hashem. If you remember, in the days of the Mishkan, when the Bechor is for those couple months that they were serving as Bechor, it was a very personal experience. You understand that it's more, Beis HaMikdash and Mishkan can be very institutional. You're just a number, you walk in with all the masses, you go to a Kohen, it's very impersonal, you don't know the Kohen, you don't know the Levi, he takes your name down, he says, what do you want me to think about? As opposed to walking into the Beis HaMikdash with your firstborn and him serving and offering the sacrifice in the Korban. It makes an entirely different experience. And by the way, even after the Bechoros were replaced, that was probably the appeal of Bamos. Why would you want to go to the impersonal, cold, Grand Central Station called the Beis HaMikdash with thousands of people where you're just a number? We can go to your backyard and conduct your services and your ceremonies outfitted more or less to your way of approaching, even though the Bechoros were no longer offering Korbanos. So the Bechoros is a very appealing aspect. Unfortunately, we blew it. We blew that through the Egel Azov. Could you imagine how different religious history would have been if the Bukharis continued to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. I can tell you one thing, some of the hypocrisy and the immorality of the first Beis HaMikdash probably would have been avoided, because there would have been more personal accountability. Second, you create impersonalization or depersonalization, you take away accountability. You take away the relationship between the person and the Kohen, but it's both ways. The Kohen doesn't feel accountable, because now I'm in a position, and now I'm in an office, and I don't have to answer to you. If I'm a Bechor, then I have to sit down with you at night and break bread, and I have to come to the bar mitzvah, and I have to come to the wedding. So I'm going to be less corrupt, and I'm going to be less selfish in my korbanos. So a lot of the decay that surrounded the Beis HaMikdash during the first Beis HaMikdash era about the Kohanim and their hypocrisy, as the Nevi'im speak about, is probably because of this depersonalization that sadly we're witnessing in Baal HaSos. It's a very sad parsha that we displaced the Kohanim, the Bechoros. But now Hashem explains it's not just because they're the firstborn of the family, and I want to make it more personal, but they're mine for a mission because of what happened in Mitzrayim. The next pasuk. What happened in Mitzrayim is Kili kol b'chor b'vnei Yisrael ba'adam u'v'habema b'yom ha'kosi kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim hekdash di osamli. Now Rashi adds one phrase. Kodesh Baruch Hu was mekadesh them shehiganti aleim bein b'chor Mitzrayim. It's not just that I saved them, but I saved them, I literally plucked them out of the b'chor Mitzrayim. Hashem is poseach. Here was a house of death. Here was a house of death. In this house, the Jewish house, there was no death. Next house, there was death. Next house, there was death. Rashi adds that to the pasuk. The pasuk doesn't say that. Hashem just says, I killed the Bechor Mitzrayim, and I took the Bechor Yisrael. Hashem says, Rashi says, he ganti aleihem bein Bechor Mitzrayim. What it means is as follows, is when you feel you've been selected out from a situation in which it was mass death and mass suffering and mass genocide and mass... So that gives you a responsibility. Well, twofold. First of all, you have a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because obviously you've been the product of Hashgacha Pratis. And anytime you've been the product of Hashgacha Pratis, that can't just be the basis for Hodah. Thank you, Hashem, for giving me Hashgacha Pratis. It creates a relationship. If I come and I say, I don't know, Hanan, I see you having a really, really hard day, hard week, come, let's learn for a couple days together. So I've selected you out, hopefully not in a way that makes other people feel disrespected, but that should create a relationship. Wow, that now we... Beyond just saying thank you, now we've built the baseline for a deeper relationship. So Kodesh Baruch Hu took the Bechoros out, so there's a Kedusha. Hikdashti osam li. You have a Hashgacha Pratis. You weren't saved fortuitously. You were saved by Kodesh Baruch Hu with special attention. Anytime Hashem pays special attention to you, that should lead to a higher level of Kedusha. You have to be elevated by it. And, not just elevated, but as the Bechoros sensed, and sadly they forfeited after less than a year, a sense of mission. Now you're not just chosen so you can have a life of privilege. You're chosen to have a life of mission. One of the things that Rav Amital took with him from the Holocaust, and we're getting closer to Rav Amital's yard site, is a lot of people emerge from the Holocaust, survivor syndrome. They felt guilty, why did all my family get decimated, annihilated, and I was saved? They felt shame. A lot of Holocaust survivors couldn't talk about it for many reasons. It was too traumatic. Rav Amital took mission from the Holocaust. I don't know why I was spared, but if I was spared, it must mean that I have something of great responsibility to accomplish in my life. Now, take that and apply this to the door you were raised in. You were raised in the door of financial comfort, of the State of Israel, of opportunity. So Hashem doesn't provide free lunches. Hashem doesn't just choose you. I'll give you a better life than you could have had 80 years ago. 80 years ago, you'd be running from Hitler in Machshava. Today, you're sitting in Medinas Yisrael learning in the Gush Bais Medrash. So it's not your choice whether Hashem puts you in a shem into a body in 1920 or in, let's say, 1900, and you'd be in the Holocaust, Chas V'Shalom, or in the year 2000, and you're sitting in the Gush Bais Medrash. So it has to be Hashem showed you Hashgacha Pratis. It has to create a Bechor-like responsibility. What is my mission in life? How can I turn this as a person, as a generation, into a mission? So there are two parts to this Rashi, into this Rashi's comment in the pasuk. When I say Kadash to assembly, without any mission, let's say you'd be on planet Jupiter, and Hashem would save you. There's no mission. You're just by yourself on a planet. So you should feel the special Hashgacha of Hashem, and that should lead to an augmented relationship. Of course, we don't live on planet Jupiter. We live on the planet Earth. We're a part of history, and the selection. And every time you have selection in life, Hashem selects you, especially when you're selected for bracha, to ask yourself, well, what does Hashem expect of me if he created these terms of bracha? Okay, so three very interesting Rashis. One Rashi is that when you ask someone, try not to be coercive, and in particular, when you ask someone and expect them to submit to hardship, it has to be their choice. You have to empower them with a vision of something greater. Number two, leadership is taking the most ugly and disgusting responsibility that no one wants to put their hands on, and you take that. Someone has to act like a Metzara here. Who's going to act like a Metzara? Oh, you want to be the Metzara? I don't want to be the Metzara. The leaders have to be the Metzara. And finally, selection for Kedusha and selection for Mishnah. Okay. Good day, everyone. Have a good day.